Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona. It's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you to the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by Vincent Serpico and Jennifer Cullum. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian.
Vincent, you're the founder and CEO of Serpico Dev, and Jennifer, you're the director of operations?
Correct.
Vincent, tell us, what is Serpico Dev? How do you serve folks here in the Valley?
Sure, absolutely. Serpico Dev is a software creation shop. We develop software. We develop software specifically for entrepreneurs, startups, and small businesses. We like to say, if you can dream it, we can build it.
Now, you're quite passionate about the fact that it's not only specifically for startups, small businesses, and entrepreneurs, it's exclusively for small businesses, startups, and entrepreneurs. Talk a little bit about that level of clarity and specificity in what you do.
Thank you, Adrian. I really appreciate you saying that. Absolutely. So yes, we are exclusively for entrepreneurs, startups, and small businesses. So we are not for enterprises. We are not for mid-markets, we're not for government, and we're not for nonprofits. We are exclusively for startups, entrepreneurs, and small businesses because we have a passion for entrepreneurs. Let's face it, entrepreneurs are the ones that create the jobs. Entrepreneurs are the ones that take the risks. Entrepreneurs are the ones that create the innovations. They're the ones like you that are doing these shows and bringing spotlight to Arizona. They're the ones who are making things happen. And those are the people we want to work with. And I got entrepreneurs in my blood. My dad had a small business in Brooklyn, New York, that I worked there every day after school and on weekends. And I actually started working there as my very first career. And I've been working with startups as a programmer for many, many, many years. So I absolutely love entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs are my heroes.
You know, there's so much association, I think, in the general population that startup means tech. But in some ways, you're bringing a level of software development expertise that a founder with an idea may not have. You want to help unpack a little bit this idea of why a small business owner or founder or somebody with a dream would come to Serpico Dev? What would you provide and how would that enhance what they're out to accomplish?
That's a good point. So first of all, we service companies that are not just technology companies. But on the flip side of that, you can say that today, almost every single company is a technology company. And what does that mean? That means that no matter what you do, technology is part of your company. So, you know, maybe 100 years ago, if you're a psychiatrist, there was no technology involved in your practice at all. You just got a couch and you talked. But today, psychiatry practice would involve a lot of technology. And I bring that up because one of our clients is a psychiatry practice out in California, and we helped them build an entire platform that integrated all of their disparate systems together and also provided a portal for their patients, for all of their providers. They were literally entering data in various systems over and over and over again, and we created a system to tie all of that together, reduce waste, and also a portal for their providers in order to be more efficient. That's how technology is helping a 150-year-old business.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me the extent to which, on the one hand, we take technology for granted in so many areas of life, and we just assume it's there and it's working for us, and we get extremely frustrated if the Wi-Fi is like a split second slower than it's supposed to be, or if we're on a website trying to get something done and we can't find the button, and we're like, what is the thing? You know, we just assume those things are going to be there. And at the same time, there's so much emerging tech that's not really penetrated the world of business. So I want to talk about some of the things that I know you have deep expertise in. I want to talk about AI. I want to talk about voice platforms and some of the other things that are out there that business of the future will take for granted, that we're maybe still early. But let's talk a little bit more about your process. You've got a book. It's available on Amazon. I read it over the weekend. Ready to Launch, an entrepreneur's guide to developing software on time and in budget. Doesn't all software get done on time and in budget, or is perhaps the situation a little different?
No, not all the time. Unfortunately, about 50% of the clients that come to me in proverbial tears that they've worked with other developers that basically blew their money. they didn't get their software developed on time, they went way over budget, or in many cases, never delivered the software or completely out of requirement scope. I've been doing this for over 20 years. And in the beginning, I stepped on a lot of landmines. And I know where the landmines are, and I know where all the dead bodies are. I've got a process that I've honed over the last 11 years owning Serpico Dev. And this process is a methodical process from ideation to actual delivery. When I meet with new clients, I explain this process over about an hour period, whiteboarding, and I always get the same reaction. I see eyes bulge, go, wow, now I get it. And they ask me, do you mind if I take a picture of this, or is it proprietary? And, you know, being 100% transparent like I am, I say, absolutely take a picture of it. Take a picture of it, show it to everybody, show it to my competitors if you want. And I got to a point where I did this so many times. I said, you know what, let me just take my my secret sauce and publish it in a book so everybody can see it.
You talk in the early part of the book about development DNA, some of the things that are in the fabric of your process. I want to bring Jennifer into this conversation because you're involved at the operational level in executing on that DNA. You also had a hand, I read in the acknowledgments, of helping bring this book to life. Jennifer, what's your role as director of operations, and what are you seeing that makes this process work so well, the kinds of things that you manage on a day-to-day basis at Serpico Dev?
When it comes to operations, I think my primary role is to solve problems, right? And I think that's what we do for our entrepreneurs. It's what we do with our clients. And so part of the book is to help entrepreneurs anticipate the problems that they're going to have and to have the tools to know how to avoid that. And so a big part, as you said, of the book is about culture. At Serpico Dev, a big part of our culture is urgency. It's ownership. We really, truly believe in partnering with our clients to help them get their goals into the world, right? So they have these great ideas. They have these ideas that are going to change the world, or at least their corner of the world. And our goal is to help them reach those goals. We have to understand that. So that means that we have to be in it. We have to own it just like they own it. And so one of the things that the book is designed to do is to help guide entrepreneurs to working with a team that is going to have their best interests at heart, who's going to understand who they are and what they're trying to do. At Serpico Dev, we're out to change development. We want it to work for not only the end users, which is a big part of my passion, but to work for the entrepreneur as well, to really make their ideas happen.
One of the key pieces that gets talked about in the book is accountability and transparency. Yes. In other words, having people see what your team is doing on their behalf, and also being accountable for meeting deadlines.
Absolutely.
Against something that you would assume is the norm. But
you would think, right? It should be the norm.
Talk a little bit about this part of the process. How do you execute on the kind of urgency and accountability that's a unique part, the secret sauce, as Vincent said, that's part of your process at Serpico Dev?
For us, it starts with owning the product. We believe in our developers really understanding the goals. So our developers work very closely with our clients. A lot of dev shops keep their developers away from the clients, right? Not all developers speak human well. I mean, that's one of my jokes, is that part of my job as operations manager is to translate developer into human. So a lot of times dev shops keep the developers away from the clients, and we absolutely disagree with that model. So part of our accountability is putting our clients and our developers together so that they're solving the problems together in ways that make sense. So our developers are always accountable to the goals of our client. Our developers are always accountable to the budget. We estimate, we say, here's how long we think it's going to take. We get our developers in on that. They buy into it. They understand it. They've thought through the project. So they're putting their reputations on the line as much as the client is putting their reputation on the line when they go out to market with this product. Accountability is a big deal to us. It's unfortunately one of those areas where, you know, it's not as popular in the software development space as it should be, and we're going to change that.
And the book itself participates in that commitment by revealing the steps in the process and, in a sense, planting a flag in the sand, if you will, a kind of implicit contract that this is what you can count on when you work with us. Vincent, you've been in the software development business, or in technology in general, for over 20 years. this is obviously something you observed as a breakdown in the industry more generally. Talk a little bit about how, when you first decided that you were going to start Serpico Dev, it's been how long now, but 10 years ago?
11 years ago, I started Serpico Dev.
You said, all right, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to start my own company. You'd worked for a lot of others. What was on your mind at that time? What did you set out to accomplish as you began to build this?
Before I started Serpico Dev, I was worked as VP of Dev for a couple of companies. I got the nickname from the C-level of Sergeant Serpico. And the reason why is that I just got shit done, period. I wasn't about excuses. I wasn't about deferring what I have to do. I was about absolutely getting things done, no matter what, on time. That's just in my DNA. And I did a damn good job at doing it. I'll pat myself on the back. And I said to myself, when I start Serpico Dev, I'm going to go ahead and take this culture and build an entire company around it. When I hire developers, when I hire anybody, inside of our employee manual, we have a section that flat out says, own your mistakes. Don't blame somebody else. Don't blame the client. Don't blame the weather. Don't blame the fact you didn't know this technology. If you messed up, say you effed up, own it, and figure out how you're going to make it better, period. That's all. If you can't do that, don't work for me.
And you mentioned in the book, too, that you have a probationary period where you, when somebody comes on, you assign them a number of internal tasks, and it's part of their evaluation in their probationary period as well. Do you find often that people struggle to meet those expectations, or does the fact that you're so explicit about them mean you're only getting the kind of people who are wired that way? Or how does that actually play out in the world of your team?
During the probationary period, we assign various tasks to potential developers, designers, testers. Sometimes we're a little ambiguous to see if they're going to come back with questions and how they handle it. Sometimes we give them extremely tight deadlines to see how they're going to handle it. It's definitely a trial by fire, and not everybody gets through it. Jennifer's been around for 6 months, and she can tell you that several folks who have been through the probationary period just didn't make the cut to the full time, and that's just what happens. And the ones that do make it, they're all part of the A team.
Jennifer, as somebody who is neck deep in the operations here, there's multiple projects happening in so many different realms because your clients represent so many different sectors and different things. How do you personally manage that level of accountability? How does it play out? What's your day like? How do you manage the demands of this environment?
I think it's fair to say that my day involves a lot of juggling. Is that fair?
Absolutely, yes. A ton of juggling.
So, to the broader point, a big part of what we do is communicating. I mean, I kind of alluded to this already, where our developers and our clients are talking, but it's really about communication. It's about making sure that everybody's on the right, on the same page together. My background is as a project manager. That's where I started out in Serpico Dev. But that trial by fire is no joke. It sounds kind of harsh, but it's actually a really good thing because it means that you know right away whether this is going to be a great fit, whether you're going to love waking up every day and coming to work. Because, hey, I get to solve problems for people all day, every day. That's what I get to do. I get to take things that don't exist and make them real. That's awesome. So communication's a big piece of that. Figuring out what you're good at. I have a background in project management, so that communication, keeping all the balls in the air as we as we're doing the things that we're doing is part of what makes me tick. The other part of how I can manage all of this is that I have an amazing team. Let me tell you about our other project manager. Our other project manager, her name's Hildy. She is no joke, a nuclear physicist. She is a PhD. She's a nuclear scientist. I'm going to be her when I grow up. I'm just like, she's so cool, right? So she is hardcore, but she's brilliant. She pays attention to the details. We have three senior level developers. There are architects. There are team leaders. These are some of the smartest people I've ever worked with. I've had the great fortune of working with very smart people my entire career. And these guys, they blow everybody out of the water. They make it easy for me. But a lot of what we do is just juggling. It's communicating. It's prioritizing. And it's really paying attention to what our clients need.
Let's talk about that, because your client needs vary significantly from project to project. You have some fascinating examples in the book. A hay broker, somebody who buys hay and sells it comes to you and needs a piece of software. That's a fascinating problem to solve. Can you say a little bit about some of the color of that case study? What happened and how did you come up with a software solution for the hay broker in Queen Creek, Arizona?
We've worked a lot of interesting business, a lot of interesting clients, over 100 at this point right now. That was one example of machine learning predictive analytics. So the idea there is that we had a whole bunch of pricing data on hay. And what's the price of hay going to be a month from now? That's extremely important for a hay broker to know so he knows what to buy at and right. what to anticipate to sell at a month from now. You know, what the weather pattern is going to be like, you know, what's historically going to be at this time of month. So we spent a few months doing a predictive analytics project there. We've had a lot of interesting projects. Another emerging technology project that we recently did was working with Defendry on a proof of concept, a prototype for a facial recognition approved list and not approved list in order to trigger a whole series of events. In other words, if you're on an approved list or if you're on a disapproved list, a camera will recognize you walking into a building. And if you're on the disapproved list, the blacklist, what'll happen is the doors will lock, a siren will sound, the police will be called, and a drone will be launched in order to track you. We actually created that proof of concept, and it is amazing looking. And we've been working some really, really fun emerging tech projects.
That runs the gamut, doesn't it? From the world of farming and commodity brokerage yeah. stuff through to security technology and things. You also refer in the book to a client who was a first-time entrepreneur with an idea about the beauty industry, and you were able to develop something in that regard as well. Every client has an idea, and those ideas are connected to so many different domains of expertise and so on. In your experience, what's more important, that somebody has a clear sense of the solution or a clear sense of the problem?
That's a really good question. All of our clients are domain experts, and they may not necessarily be technology experts. In fact, the vast majority of our clients are not technology experts, but they're domain experts. And what they understand is that there is a clear problem in their space, and they have an idea on how to solve this problem with technology, but they're not sure how to get from that ideation phase to the actual delivery in the market phase. Is this a mobile app? Is this a web app? Is this a system integration, or does it involve AI? In many cases, there are technologies they haven't thought of to apply to the situation that'll help solve the problem. So they're very aware of the problem, and they're also somewhat aware of the solution, and that's where we work together. We work together with their domain expertise, our technology expertise, and we brainstorm. And in the book, we discuss the process that we go through, the flow diagrams, the wireframes, and all of that. That helps you take that idea, and that helps you map it out. And with a subject matter expert, our client, and with a technology expert ourselves, magic can happen. And even if you don't hire Serpico Dev, I highly recommend you read the book because it provides expectations of what other software developers should be doing. And if they're not doing that, find somebody else.
The book is ready to launch, An Entrepreneur's Guide to Developing Software on Time and on Budget. Vincent Serpico, you have talked in the book about a really interesting example. It caught my eye. I grew up in Southern California, went to Disneyland a lot as a kid, and you mentioned the fact that Disneyland, the original theme park in Anaheim, was built in 366 days by a retired Navy Admiral, Joe Fowler. Now, this is not a guy with any experience in building theme parks. In fact, at the time, I don't think there was anybody on the planet with the experience of building theme parks, and yet he got the job done. What's so inspiring to you about that example? Why did you include that in the book?
In my opinion, the absolute defining attribute of any entrepreneur is grit. It's knowing that you can get something done. It's not knowing how you're going to get it done, but knowing that you absolutely can get it done. I absolutely love what Henry Ford said, you know, whether you think you can or think you can't, either way, you're right. And, you know, you might not know how to develop an app. You might not know how to do financial accounting. You might not know how to hire a lawyer. But if you know absolutely 100% sure you're going to get this done and you're willing to put in the effort to get it done. I recently heard Mark Cuban speak here in Phoenix, and one of the things he said that inspired me was, you might not have control over a lot of things in your life, but what you do have control over is your effort. And you can outwork your competition, and you can go ahead and put in more effort. And between that type of grit, that type of persistence, that type of belief in yourself, that's why I love entrepreneurs. I love the ones that are willing to say, all right, burn the ships. We're going to succeed. There is no retreat. And that's what Fowler did. And I love it.
And I also love the specific quote when somebody asked him, you did this in 366 days. How did you do it? And he said, we used every day. Right.
Yeah,
in other
exactly.
words, you got more work product out of the same amount of time that everyone else has. It's another take on that effort. And it had to be smart. You make a lot in here of the fact that a software development project, I didn't see any sort of percentage or ratio or something. That's not really the point. But the significant amount of the work at the front end of that project is planning. So after you brainstorm, after you settle on, you know, at least a general concept for the solution, you execute a pretty elaborate planning process. Jennifer, what's the importance of planning in this methodology?
So one of my favorite quotes, speaking of quotes, is from General Eisenhower. And he once said something to the effect of plans are nothing. Planning is everything, right? Because what happens in the planning phase is that you're clarifying your goals. You're clarifying the requirements. You're figuring out exactly what it is that you need to do. Going back to your previous question about the problem or the solution, in the project management world, one of the things that we say is to marry the problem, not the solution. Right. So it's that part of that planning is keeping going back to the problem, trying to figure out what's the problem. How are we solving that? What are we doing to solve that problem? So the planning's everything. The reality is that in software development, as soon as we start, as soon as your business starts, things change. I mean, I think every business owner knows that, you know, the market conditions change. Your competitor does something you didn't expect. All kinds of things change. And so it's not that the planning is about controlling what's happening, but rather thinking about what could happen and figuring out what are our responses to that going to be. So when the market does shift, how are we going to respond? When your competitor does something, how are we going to respond? When some new product gets launched that impacts your product, what are we going to do about it? So planning is everything. The plan, that's valuable because it gives us a direction. It gives us a roadmap. But the planning itself is really what's important, especially for the new entrepreneur, especially for the business owner who's figuring out the solution that they're trying to sell in the marketplace.
Yeah. You know, the other famous quote, since we're dropping them, is, is that no battle plan survives first contact.
Absolutely.
With the enemy, right? So you can plan all you want, but when you get onto the field of play or battle or development, it's the ability to identify new opportunities to pivot and iterate quickly. Like many software development shops, you rely on an iterative process of sprints. Talk a little bit about that so folks who don't understand anything about how developers work can understand what's going on as the coders and the engineers get their hands dirty and begin to actually execute on building software.
All right. So, excuse me, I'm going to get dorky for a few minutes because I love this project management stuff. A sprint is part of a project methodology called Agile. And Agile is named that way with the idea that, you know, life rarely lets you go in a straight direction. Sometimes you got to be flexible. You got to be agile. You got to pivot when you need to pivot. And so our process of actually coding is based on what are known as two-week sprints. Sprints like in the athletic world, right? Where you run as hard as you can for a short amount of time, and then you take a rest, and then you start all over again. Typically, we run 2 to 3 week sprints. And in that time, we start off by writing our test scripts, right? We are all about QA, and every dev shop should be. We figure out what it is we're creating, right? And then we write those test scripts, then we start coding, and then we test. Because if you don't know what you're coding from the start, how are you going to know when you get there? So we write our test scripts, we code, then we test our code, then we bring it to our client and we do a demo. And that's always the fun part, right? I love watching clients light up when they see their reality changing because of the idea that they had in their head. So we show them. That's the point at which they can start to tell us where the next pivot's going to come. Maybe they saw a new opportunity in the market and they want to really take advantage of that. So the next thing that we do is to evaluate where we are, to look at the next sprint coming up and to make sure that the priorities for that sprint still make sense. If they don't, we realign. Maybe we take that feedback, we make some adjustments, and then we'll start all over and we go sprint through sprint until we have a product that we're ready to launch.
Just to reiterate what Jennifer said, first of all, the planning is essential because it helps you identify potential problems upfront before you start coding. There used to be a methodology that was very popular called waterfall. Waterfall was do all the planning upfront, then do all the coding, and then you're done. That methodology turned out to be a bad methodology because it didn't allow you to change along the way. So then Agile came along, and Agile basically said, we start coding and we make changes along the way. But pure Agile in and of itself is also not a great strategy because it doesn't allow you to plan long term. So we have a hybrid approach. The hybrid approach starts with the waterfall, with all the planning, so that you can go ahead and anticipate any issues and really think through the problem. But then we switch 180 degrees after the planning phase into Agile and take that waterfall plan and break it down into sprints. And as Jennifer said, my favorite part of the job is when I see clients' faces light up and they say, wow, this idea that I had in my head is actually coming to life and I can see it. People are using it and it's making a difference. That's my favorite part. And that's why I do this.
We've talked about how the process unfolds, the planning, the execution, and then you support your creations beyond launching, right? The documentation and other things. What other value-added services get packaged along with creating the software itself? Sure. You don't just write code and release it into the wild.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, we're always, always there for our clients after release. We've heard from clients months to years later on small changes they want or small updates they want. But more than that, I provide value-added services personally. So I've been in the business world for a long time. I've been a developer for a very long time. I know data science. I also actively angel invest. So I like to think that I understand the technology space from a 360 vantage, investing. I've raised capital myself. I've started businesses. I've worked in every aspect of development. And I provide advice to my clients as value add. Clients will show me their pitch decks and I'll work with them on their pitch decks. Or clients will say, can you sit in on an investor meeting? Or can you look at my term sheet and help me, massage the term sheet? Do you have any ideas for a go-to-market strategy? Can you recommend a lawyer? And all of that is just value add that I add to the experience.
You mentioned in here that you do some work with developers in Mexico. What's the reason and thinking behind that?
When I first started out, I worked with a combination of Indian and Mexican developers. And what I found working with India was that I couldn't communicate with the developers during the day. I had to wait until my evening to begin communicating with the developers and then wait almost 24 hours for updates. This also created a problem that I wanted clients to be able to communicate directly with developers. So this slowed down development. And while the hourly rate in India was less, the overall project cost was far higher because of miscommunication, poor communication, et cetera. So now I work with exclusively with Mexican developers, and I'm able to communicate with them literally all day long. My phone right now is blowing up with communications from my developers. But more than that, I encourage clients to reach out directly to the developers and to speak directly with the developers. That's number one. Number two is I find that the talent in Mexico is just unbelievable. These guys are just amazingly, amazingly smart. The Mexican developers use the exact same textbooks in college that the American developers use. They go to the exact same online courses and they all share in the exact same community. And they are absolutely brilliant. Also, number three, the work ethic is just unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable work ethic. I got to tell these guys to take a day off. I was like, come on, you can take a couple of days off. But the work ethic is unbelievable. And the loyalty, oh my God, through the roof loyal.
I mean, this is another dimension in which technology has made our world smaller. I mean, the very same technology that you're building is also what has created this ability to work in a distributed way with talent from literally around the world. You know, if somebody is competent and skilled and creative and they can problem solve with the best of them, I mean, isn't it great that, again, in a state with such a close partnership with our southern neighbor, that you can bring that into the software dimension as well? Talk to me a little bit about something you mentioned right before our interview, a new venture, the AZ Innovators Guild, a different kind of incubator. First of all, what's the idea here and why is this important?
There's a lot of incubators in Arizona. There's a lot of incubators around the country. And an incubator is a place that a brand new startup will go in order to learn various aspects of a business. They'll learn how to deal with lawyers. They'll learn accounting. They'll learn go-to-market strategies. They'll learn development. They'll learn, the list goes on and on and on. I think that there's a couple of pitfalls with incubators. First of all, they're expensive. Not every entrepreneur can afford an incubator, which means that some entrepreneurs with brilliant ideas are closed out. Second of all, the course content is essentially the same for everybody. So, you know, if you understand marketing really, really well, you don't really need to learn marketing for 2 or 3 weeks. It's a waste of your time when you need to be moving a lot faster, you know? And third of all, you're getting advice from the same person over and over and over again. So I'm creating the AZ Innovators Guild. The AZ Innovators Guild is a different type of incubator that is less of a mentorship from one person to another and more of a peer mentorship. So in other words, I believe that everybody has something to teach and everybody has something to learn. So if I mentor you, Adrian, I would expect you to mentor me on something. It's peer-to-peer. And the AZ Innovators Guild is 100% free. It's a full-day event on Saturday, May 18th. Come on down, and we would expect every participant to mentor and to be mentored.
That's fascinating. So you're innovating with innovators on the cost, on the structure, and on really the diversity of perspectives and voices that people are going to benefit from. Where is this happening? It's on Saturday, May 18 from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. What's the location?
The location is AZ Cowork, which is right off the 101 on Raintree.
Somebody would be a good fit for something like this if they had an idea or if they already are beginning to execute on an idea. Who's the right people to come to AZ Innovators Guild?
The right people to come to AZ Innovators Guild are folks that have started a startup or are considering a startup in the next 3 to 6 months. So we are only inviting folks that actively have startups or are actively considering startups. These are folks that have something to mentor and want to be mentored on something and want to engage within a group activity. There'll be no sponsors. There'll be no vendors. This is 100% community organized, self-organized event.
And that's important too, because in an ecosystem, there are a lot of different types of folks. And I don't know that this is always completely understood, that the point of view, the commitments, the experience of a funder is very different than a founder, is very different than somebody who's actually a W-2 employee of a company, which may serve the community, but doesn't in the same way have the same skin in the game as a founder. A professional services person, an expert consultant, is also someone who participates in the startup ecosystem or the tech ecosystem, but in a very different way. They're not executing on the same thesis as the founder of a company. So it's interesting to really just carve out a founder to founder to co-founder kind of conversation. What are your expectations and hopes for this event? I mean, this is a first attempt, right? This is the first one. And how do you hope this goes? And what's the future hold?
This will be the inaugural event, absolutely. And my hopes is that during this full day event, founders will have an opportunity to meet other founders, to share stories. There are some founders out there that want to talk about accounting. Others want to talk about work-life balance. And it's my hope that they're going to be able to communicate with each other, share stories with each other, and peer mentor. I don't want to create this off balance of I'm a mentor and you're a student. I want to create the balance of we're all teaching each other. We're all learning from each other because after all, that's what the community is about.
It's fascinating to me as a student of history that you choose the word guild to describe this. I personally think that we're seeing a re-medievalization to a certain degree as communities become more local at the same time as we're connected to much further places much faster than we have in the past. There's an increasing interest in the immediate environment and where you live and where you work, and kind of co-working space is also part of this, a kind of relocalization to a certain degree. So this being a guild is an intentional choice. What, Jennifer, what is that? You were laughing there for a minute. What does that evoke for you?
Well, it's funny because my educational background is history. I'm actually a historian by training. So I'm always going to the past to solve our current problems because that's how we got here, right? So we chose Guild very specifically to evoke a lot of those things that you mentioned. So I'm really excited that they came to your mind. A guild was originally a professional association that was designed for the protection of its members, and that was designed to provide a place to pass down best practices that we would say today, right? Best practices and trade secrets, and to make sure that I always think of the architecture guild, right? Because the whole point of the architecture's guild was so buildings didn't fall down on people's heads, right? I mean, it was a protection for both the professionals and for the community. And so we chose that word guild intentionally to evoke this sense of community, this sense of belonging, this sense of being able to pass knowledge on to other people who are trying to do things that are really important and meaningful and that are going to shape the way the rest of the community understands your profession and what you are and what you do.
To me, the word guild is such a nice, it evokes craft and community.
Absolutely.
At the same time, you know, being in this with others who are committed to the same things, devoted to sharpening the same saw, if you will, and really building something together. So AZ Innovators Guild happening Saturday, May 18 from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at AZ Cowork. Before we wrap up our conversation, Vincent, I'd love to talk just a little bit about AI, about some of the, you know, some of the hype and some of the reality. You mentioned several projects that use machine learning models, predictive analytics, and other things. What's happening in this regard that folks with an idea might not necessarily realize they need to be paying attention to in a world where you can build Alexa skills on top of a platform, in a world where there's a lot of different resources available that are being, you know, codified to a certain degree, reaching a level of maturity at this point in time? What are your thoughts on that?
AI actually originated in the summer of 1957. They had grand plans for AI, and those plans just never came to fruition, and AI went through its first nuclear winter. AI came back again in the 70s and through the 80s with expert machines, but the expert machines reached a certain limit because they had to be hand-coded, and AI went through its second nuclear winter. And AI has recently emerged again over the past 15, 20 years with the advent of neural networks, specifically convolutional neural networks, and with the advent of really, really fast computers and large amounts of data, AI is here. There is no third nuclear winter, and AI is no longer hype. It is literally everywhere. McDonald's recently, when I say recently, I'm talking about a couple of days ago, bought an AI company for $300 million. They're going to be using it at their drive-thrus in order to make recommendations based on the time of day, the weather. As you start ordering, it'll know what to recommend to you while you're ordering. AI is absolutely here. Voice technologies is now being adopted faster than any other technology in the history of humankind. Voice technology is everywhere. Do you talk to your phone? I do. I talk to text messages. I talk to emails. Voice technology is in cars. I don't know about you, but I'm always talking to my car. Cars are going to be installed with Alexa, Siri, Google Assistant, and of course, smart speakers. Now, the amazing thing about voice technology that I want every business owner and every entrepreneur to understand is that unlike an app where it's installed in one spot, voice technology is going to be literally everywhere. So your skill, your Alexa skill, your Google Assistant action could be accessible literally everywhere. And voice-first technology is something that I want every entrepreneur to really, really understand and to really appreciate. The capabilities of AI, the technological capabilities of AI, have somewhat plateaued. Okay, we've made amazing progress in the last 15 years to the point that speech recognizers are more accurate than humans. Facial recognition is more accurate than humans. In other words, a speech recognizer will do a better job transcribing than a professional transcriber. And facial recognition will do a better job at recognizing people than you will. That's all here. And that technology is improving, but it's improving at a very slow pace at this point. But the implementation of this AI is barely nascent. Do you know what that means? That means there's a massive opportunity out there for entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs that are gritty, entrepreneurs that are creative, entrepreneurs that know that they can bring this technology to the forefront. And the implementation of this by developers is becoming more and more accessible. This is absolutely the time, the best time in history to use the most amazing technology to bring ideas to life.
It includes, but goes way beyond Alexa, which gets a lot of the trade press and general tech coverage and things, but you know, this idea that seamless interfaces with our most natural communication tool, our own voice, which includes accessibility issues as well for you know, the adoption of Alexa by the very young and the very old in some ways is you know, path breaking. I mean, my own kids are at home talking to the TV because I figured out if you hold down the button on the Amazon Fire remote, they can get it to play Paw Patrol and do other stuff. But you know, we have the ability to build things on top of these platforms that we never had before. And a lot of folks probably don't realize that their idea or the problem that they want to solve in many ways is going to have a voice first dimension to that solution. Is this something that you are deep into? Is it something that you're watching? What's Serpico Dev's footprint in the voice and AI space?
That's a great point.
Which is not the same space. I know voice and AI, they tend to overlap, but they're not necessarily always the same. Go ahead.
So voice is a subset of AI. Speech recognition, natural language processing, it's all a subset of AI. And yes, you're going to see more and more voice-first interfaces everywhere. A very small set of houses right now are smart homes that you can control your lights with by saying, you know, living room lights on, living room lights off. Those who have implemented it say it is amazing, and they would never go back to manually flipping the lights. You're seeing voice integrated into microwaves, into clocks. You're seeing it into cars, and you're going to see it literally everywhere. And the voice first interface is something that small businesses and that entrepreneurs need to understand when they're implementing their solution. Now, remember that you can take an Alexa device and you can hook it up to literally any app, any mobile app, any other piece of technology in the world. So any technology that currently exists that's out there, an Alexa voice interface can work with. The gamers are using it left, right, and center. And it's really important to understand the integration that's possible and to understand that voice-first interfaces are going to be absolutely the wave of the future. On our business card, it says, say, Alexa, open Serpico Dev. And for those who are listening right now, do it. Say, Alexa, open Serpico Dev. And it's our 1 minute pitch on Alexa. And as a small business, you should be there too. It's just yet another avenue to market your business and to get out there.
And that's really valuable to remind people that what we're talking about here is not just the technology that gets things done. There's also content dimension to voice first as well. The fact that in addition to the Alexa skills, you've got what's currently called flash briefings and other things that are essentially micro content that is triggered by voice commands and then that you listen to. And that the fact that that can happen on a smart speaker, on your phone, in your car. I distinctly remember, I don't remember the date because again, as I say, that's not my thing, but it was like summer of 82, 83, something like that. The first time that I put the disc into the IBM PC that we had at home and played Zork 1, which is a game that had been ported from the PDP-11 and now was running on the new personal computers. And the fact that you could type sentences in English into, and that was the commands. You could say, walk down the path and look up in the tree, and it would parse the language. And that blew my mind. Where we're at now is so incredibly far beyond, that was 30 something years ago. We have come so far, it is mind-boggling, and the speed of the building of this kind of technology is only increasing. So you thought that, you know, if past is prologue, you thought that stuff was cool. wait and see what's coming. I want to leave you guys with the final shots. What are you excited by? What gets you fired up and out of bed in the morning? And what can we expect from the future from Serpico Dev? Jennifer?
What gets me up in the morning is, what is the new thing somebody's thought of? My absolute favorite part of my job, and this is hard to nail down because I love everything about my job, but my absolute favorite part of the job is meeting people who have solutions to things I didn't know were problems. But now as soon as they say it, it's like, oh my gosh, we got to fix that. And I get to be part of that solution every day. So seeing very smart people with very smart ideas solving the world's problems, either in their corner of the world or for the whole world, is really exciting.
Great. Vincent, what are you inspired by? What lights you up? What does the future hold for Serpico Dev?
What lights me up is possibilities, and possibilities in two aspects. First of all, when I meet with new clients, I'm always excited. I'm always excited to meet with a serious entrepreneur who has a really good idea and has got the fire in her belly to go ahead and bring it to life. I mean, that's why I work with entrepreneurs. That's why I don't work with government or enterprises. I don't see that same fire. So I absolutely love that. And the possibility of emerging technologies, I mean, between voice and AI and drones and robotics, and as these are converging, our world is changing in ways that we have never, ever, ever seen before. I mean, there are things that we do on a daily basis we take for granted. When you unlock your phone with your face, I mean, if I told you this 10 years ago, you would have said, what? No, of course not. If I told you 10 years ago, you'd be talking to an Alexa device. We're doing things today that you don't stop and think that could not have been done only 10 years ago. And that's changing constantly. And I'm meeting with the entrepreneurs on a daily basis who are bringing those technologies together, whether it's an app or it's an AI, and they're making the world different. They're changing their part of the world.
Marvelous. I'm excited just listening to this conversation, and I'm excited for what the future holds. If you want to participate, show up to, if you're a founder, show up at the AZ Innovators Guild on Saturday, May 18 from 8 to 4 p.m. at AZ Cowork. Pick up Vincent Serpico's book, Ready to Launch. It's available on Amazon. It lays out the process. Whether you're going to hire Serpico Dev or whether you're going to use this as a benchmark to compare other folks that you're working with, the level of transparency and specificity about what you should expect from the software development process is laid out very clearly in that book. Jennifer, Vincent, thank you so much for joining us here in the studio today.
Thank you, Adrian.
For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and we'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.